This is BookCareers.com Live, the podcast about careers in book publishing for people who are looking for a job, building a career, or who want to do their current job better. I'm your host, Suzanne Collier, the founder of BookCareers.com, and it's my job to solve career problems relating to the book world. Hello and welcome to episode 172 of BookCareers.com Live. This week I'd like to talk to you about why people don't pass their probation period in a new job and also give a few tips to help you retain your new job. So you've done everything. You applied for the job, you passed the interview stages and any tests, got offered the job and started work. You've got through your first few weeks and you think, yes, I'm doing well. Then suddenly you are called into your line manager's office and told that you are not performing as well as you should be, or you're being too slow, or you've made a mistake, or even worse, you've made several mistakes. And it's like a real kick in the stomach. A blow you weren't expecting, and suddenly you are told if things don't dramatically and instantly improve within a set time frame, sometimes this might be immediately or within 2 to 4 weeks, they're very sorry, but they are going to have to let you go. And that is it. The publishing job, which you had such high hopes for, is currently hanging by a thread. Here are three frequent reasons why someone won't make their probation, plus five top tips. Number one is being disorganised. The job advertisement said that the publisher wanted someone who could multitask in a busy office and report to several directors, and you convinced them during your interviews that yes, this person was you. Yet in reality, you're struggling with the basics. You've got 150 plus emails coming in a day and you can't find the time to answer or process them all. And though you've only been there 2 weeks, you already have 1,000 plus unanswered emails in your inbox and you're being pulled from pillar to post with conflicting information on deadlines. You've already missed one important deadline, and although your boss managed to reclaim the situation, they were not happy. Your desk looks a mess, a jumble of papers, folders, manuscripts and proofs, and you're already wondering how you are going to finish your day on time or long term have any normal life outside of your job. Number two is attitude, and this can take several strands. Your behaviour, misjudging conversations and interactions, over-friendliness and inappropriate behaviour, interrupting senior colleagues at meetings or talking over them. I was reminded this week of the phrase, leave your ego at the door. It is sometimes really hard to cope with. You may have come from an environment where you've been the most senior, say at university or in another job where you were of a different level, and suddenly you are the lowest ranking person in the team. Especially if this is your first job in publishing and you've over-glamorised it in your head, you might have thought you'd be editing from day one. But instead, you're sitting there trying to organise a folder of manuscripts on the server. Not the fabulous job you told everyone about. I also think what comes into play here are the dynamics of your family, relationships and friendships. If you've always got to shout to be heard within your family or friends, and the one who shouts the loudest gets their own way, remember those dynamics and how you talk to people outside of work don't often work in professional working environments. And yes, whilst you might work with a friendly, relaxed team, remember These people are not your friends. They are your colleagues and acquaintances. You only ever really become friends with someone once you leave the job, because until that moment, you can still be played against each other. This also works in the vocabulary you use too. When you write emails, are you using similar terms of address and wording throughout? A comment I see frequently from management is that a few less hires, hiya, and okays would be appreciated. And I'm going to make you all paranoid now. Next time you're in a conversation with someone who is giving you an instruction, how many times do you say okay at the end of each of their sentences without really taking in what it is you are being told to do? I see this so frequently. Saying okay, okay in parrot fashion is not necessarily a good thing. Remember episode 169 of this podcast on reading people, that non-verbal communication is 80% of all communication. So non-verbal communication, such as nodding your head, could be stronger than you actually saying, okay, okay. It also means that you're letting someone senior speak, which are without interruption, which is always a good thing. Number three is cultural fit, and this quickly becomes exposed at a senior level, or you've been working for a publisher who had unlimited resources and staff, and suddenly you find you're in a publisher where you have to take it in turns to staff the office phone when everyone is at lunch. A good example of this is a boss who I had who came from a big publisher and had been painted a terrible picture of the department. I don't know what they were told about the department, but our issues weren't one of organisation. We were an efficient team. Our main issue was common with many publishing teams. We lacked staff resource. The system was that we had each rep had an in-tray, and twice a week, once if there was not much in it or nothing urgent, we would parcel up the advanced material and samples and post them off to the reps. That way, the reps got items for their sales kit as soon as they were available, whether it was an advanced jacket, a book proof, a finished copy, details of a new forthcoming title or catalogues. Then this director came in from a big publisher. Because of what they had been told about us, without any consultation, they wanted to reorganise something which we never saw as an issue: the reps trays and the sales material we sent to all our sales reps and agents. Their view was we needed larger bays for each of the reps, and we should hold off sending material and then only send material for the month the reps and agents were about to be sailing. So basically, the small in-house team would be expected to collate a full sales kit for each rep, which would then be posted out once a month. Now, this might work in some publishers, but in our small company where material was often late or sometimes early, and we didn't have the staff resource nor the space to make these big bays, it just wasn't going to work. Plus, as anyone in sales can tell you, not all customers are on the same buying schedules, so the best thing to do is to send the reps the materials as and when we got it, such as we were already doing. there were lots of other examples too of how they'd worked with things in a big company and then they'd come into a small company and expected us to change things with no staff resource and very little financial resource. And yes, they left before the end of their probation period. You'll see from these 3 points that only the first really reflects on your ability to do the job. So here are 5 tips to help you pass your probation. Number 1 is to listen and make notes. When you first start a new role, often you are given a flurry of information, verbal and written, and it's difficult to see initially what you need to remember and what might be irrelevant as it only happens once a year. So listen to what you are being told. Make notes where you can. Far better to be seen to be writing everything down than for your line manager to have no confidence in you because you never seem to take note of anything. Number 2 is to reflect back on any instruction being said to you, particularly if you've been told that something is critical or it is crucial that you get it right. Even if it is a task you've done in a previous job, there is nothing wrong in your first few weeks saying, "Can I just check back with you? First, I log all the incoming manuscripts and give them a number, and then I allocate a reader." There is a whole podcast episode on reflecting back. It's called How to Manage Your Boss. It was episode number 22, so quite some time ago, and it remains one of our most popular episodes. I'll link it in the blog post which accompanies this episode. Number 3 is to observe. Look at the vocabulary being used in emails and meetings. Look at the dynamics between those of a similar grade role as yourself and the senior staff. If the director always addresses an email to you as "dear," then that is often the best way to respond to any email they send to you. You'll always notice when I email you, even though you might say "hi" or "hiya," I will always respond with "hello." That is my standard email etiquette with clients. Point number 4 is to ask for help. There is nothing wrong with asking for help in the right way. The wrong way of asking for help is saying, "I can't do this job. There are way too many emails. Can you help me, please?" That will quickly get you fired. The right way is something like, "Wow, you said there were a lot of emails and you were right. Can we please have a quick chat as to how best to prioritise these, as I want to ensure you're happy with everything?" There is also at least one podcast episode on managing your emails. I'm a bit behind with mine at present and I'll be using the same system. I take 5 from the top, the newest, and 2 from the bottom, the oldest. And that way you meet in the middle and don't constantly feel sick that you are way, way behind if you only start with the oldest emails first. You could also ask for help initially if you report to 2 different people who both want their own tasks to take priority over each other, particularly if they both give you urgent work with exactly the same priority and deadline. Ask them both as to how to prioritise one over the other, especially if you are an entry-level assistant. It shouldn't be your sole responsibility in your first few weeks to make this judgment call, particularly at entry level. And I'm really sorry, but if you're a manager, managers should know better than to dump any internal conflicts or politics onto their entry-level assistant staff. And if something hasn't been explained to you properly, there's no harm in asking about it more than once, and ideally no more than that. If you're in an entry-level role, you're not meant to know everything, so do ask questions if you are unsure about anything, providing you're not interrupting someone every 5 minutes. Remember, they have a job to do too. Most will be happy to help. Number 5 is to refer to your job description. If you're new in a role, it's likely that your job description will only recently have been reviewed and updated. And whenever something is going wrong in a job, the job description is the first document that is likely to be referred to, especially if you are likely to be fired. So read through it and see if it makes sense of any of the priorities or workload you have been given. And here's a bonus tip, number 6. If you are hauled into a meeting where you are initially told your work is not up to scratch, then often you will be given areas for improvement, a time frame to improve, and a target date by which this improvement needs to be demonstrated. For instance, it might be that within 1 week, ensure that 75% of all emails are answered within 24 hours. If a target such as this is set, do make sure it is achievable before agreeing to it. Frequently, people turn up at my door when it's way too late and the situation of losing your job on probation cannot be retrieved. But if you come to me when you first get those alarm bells going off, we may be able to turn the situation around. I've done this for many others. It is possible I could help you too. If you're stuck in a difficult situation in your job, or you wish you had a job to be stuck in, please book into our careers clinic on the bookcareers.com website where it says book a call, or my email, as always, is suzanne@bookcareers.com. Now it is your opportunity to join in the live discussion. You can find us across social media using the hashtag bookcareers, or on Twitter @bookcareers, or me personally, Suzanne Collier. Or visit our own platform at bookcareers.com/live. Thank you for listening. May you all be doing a job you love and being paid the salary that you so richly deserve.